The answer comes, and when they can perfect truth, the self is not there, even in 100,000 years of troubles. Now we can see and hear, we can remember and accept. I vow to make Buddha's truth one with myself.
Buddha, Siddharma, the Sangha. Meditation, there's the line, if your first step is false, you will immediately stumble. There's no area in religious life where this is more true than in the area of how we understand the precepts. There is a starting point, both intuitive and one day experiential, for our understanding of the precepts. And that is the principle of original enlightenment. Since there is nothing from the first, where can the dust alight? In the famous poem of the sixth ancestor, Daikan Enno. This original enlightenment, this original immaculacy, that which is sometimes called our original face, our true appearance, from before we were conceived in our mother's womb, our true nature. This is the true starting point, foundation for the understanding of the precepts. In this, Buddhism differs substantially from some other religions. If you start from a point of view of original sin, that we are somehow flawed in our very nature, innermost nature, you get a very different religious morality. And you get a very different understanding of the very essence of that true nature of which we speak. To put it very simply, if you start from the position of original enlightenment, you do not have a true nature, a Buddha nature, a cosmic Buddha that judges. If you start from the position of original sin, you have a God that judges. So if we start from the position of original enlightenment, what then does religious morality look like? Or in other words, what is the true description of the deeply spiritual life? most excellent mirror samadhi, a poem written by great master Tozan, has as one of its earliest lines, "Preserve well, for you now have. This is all." This is saying you already possess your true treasure within your own heart. Guard it well. When she quoted this line, River Master often used the word guard. Sometimes she would say preserve well, sometimes she would say guard well. Another way to put this is very simply, since your true nature, the very essence of your being, is immaculate from the very beginning, do not create the illusion of dirt. Do not create clouds in a clear sky. And this is why we have the precepts. We do not have the precepts so that we will, through virtuous action, save ourselves from the judgment and being sent to hell. We have the precepts because our true nature is original enlightenment itself. So why would we blind ourselves? Why would we do that which blinds ourselves to this reality? Due to ignorance of this truth about ourselves, beings act in ways that create the illusion of dirt, the illusion of clouds. Above everything else, because we judge ourselves, as unworthy of the love of God, we come to believe in a God that judges us. But if even for a moment we can drop the self-doubt and the self-judgment, then what the eternal truly is, what our own true nature truly is, can reveal itself. And there is neither doubt nor self-judgment within it. If we look at where the taking to heart on a new level of the precepts comes in how to grow lotus blossom, it's very significant where it comes. It comes after there has been a very deep, very thorough sangha, accepting where one has not acted in harmony with one's true nature, admitting it, accepting it. Asking for help to do better, resolving to do better in the future. So having cleansed the heart through contrition, now the precepts are revealed as being incredibly important. And the understanding of what the precepts are really about is incredibly important. Having cleansed the heart, now do not do that which creates more clouds in a clear sky. Do not do that which again creates the illusion of dirt. As Reverend Master said, do not rebuild the house of ego. It never was God judging man. It was only ever people in their own shock, their own pain, their own confusion, their own grief, blaming and condemning themselves. Judging themselves as being unworthy of an infinite love. Yet to that infinite love, there is neither worthy nor unworthy. A Buddha is not more worthy of love than a Stalin or a Hitler to that infinite love. It makes no difference to it. It makes a difference to us how we live. How we treat our fellow beings, and how we treat ourselves. The law of karma is inexorable. When we do that which is not in harmony with our true nature, we create the clouds in the clear sky. We create suffering. The suffering is telling us wrong way. The suffering is a signal. It is not a punishment. It is not condemnation and judgment. When River Master taught about the five laws of the universe, the point that she emphasized most strongly was the importance of our not trying to abrogate the role and the responsibility of the eternal. We tend to think that it is our right to judge ourselves. It is amazing how much punishment one can mete out to oneself in a single act of self-judgment. that is neither our right nor that of anyone else. The Eternal does not judge self or other. The Eternal does not create clouds in a clear sky. The Eternal does not send some to heaven and others to hell. The Eternal does not prefer one over another. The Eternal does not care about virtue and vice. There is nothing from the first. There is nowhere for the dust to alight. The precepts are not there because man is evil and must perfect himself in order to be saved. The precepts are not there because man is evil and must be saved by God's grace. The precepts are there because every being is of the Eternal and shares in the immaculacy of the Eternal, whether that being knows it or not. And that if that being wishes to take the precepts to heart, that being can learn how to live in such a way as not to create clouds in a clear sky, not to judge oneself or others, not to abrogate the role of the Eternal, the responsibility of the Eternal.